the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And in the midst of our opponent preview series, again, during this series, I'm numbering the episodes because they're not being recorded in any particular order, although my attempt is to release them as the Cardinals schedule goes. And so while this is, I think, like my 10th show, it will probably be the third that I release that'll get released later this week. I am on the line with Lions Wire managing editor Jeff Risden. Very familiar to the show is as the Cardinals and Lions play often, and I think also once I had you on when you were talk Browns 1 year, I think, as well. Because Jeff,
I believe so.
Jeff does a lot of things. He's covered a lot. He's had a lot of hats here on the wire, covering Draft Wire, covering the Browns, covering the Lions. You haven't covered the Cardinals. I think that's about it, right?
I have not. Yeah. It's I have worn a lot of hats in my years here. But I'm originally from Cleveland, but I am not a Browns fan. So I moved on from that. I've been a Lions fan for a very, very, very long time. And covering those two teams makes you cover the draft.
It's finally paying off.
They both made the playoffs last year, which was wild to me. I'm not sure that it happened in my cognizant lifetime. So it's been a very, very good time. It's a good time to be me, finally.
It is. The Lions coming off of a fantastic season. The Cardinals face the Lions in week 3 at home. But let's talk about what we've done in previous years. We'll look back at last season. We'll look at what they've done in the offseason and kind of what the hopes are for the coming season. And 2023, it was, if you could have drawn up kind of the roadmap and kind of the 3-4 year plan for Dan Campbell when he got hired, they followed the script almost perfectly. They progressed from a not so great team to a wildly fun team that almost made the playoffs. In the last year, 12 wins, winning the NFC North and then making it to the NFC Championship game and really giving San Francisco a run for their money, especially in that first half, coming within a half of the Super Bowl, which I could Lions fans have survived? Like, could they have survived making it to the Super Bowl, actually?
I'm not sure that Las Vegas as a city would have survived the Detroit Lions fan influx into it for a Super Bowl. But we got our taste, you know, we got our beak wet. Now we want to dive fully in. And it's there for them, man. That championship game was so frustrating. So I was in Mobile for that, for the Senior Bowl. I run a Lions podcast, Detroit Lions podcast, and we were watching it together in our hotel room. And the first half, we were worried that we were going to get thrown out of the hotel we were in because we were being so loud and obnoxious. So I'm a person, when I get frustrated, I get very, very quiet. And I'm not sure that we talked in our room in the entire second half. It was rough, but it was a magical year, you know, coming off of the uprising from the year before, where they started 1-5 and then finished very strong, just missed the playoffs on a technicality. And then, beating Green Bay, Kirby Joseph intercepting Aaron Rodgers' last pass in Green Bay Packers uniform was a lot of fun that way. The season starting off, season opener Thursday night, going into Kansas City, spoiling their season. That kicked off a fantastic season. Last year was one for the ages, man. It was the best season in Detroit Lions. I'm in my 50s. It was the best season of my lifetime. No doubt about it.
You know, they had a top 5 offense. They were number 3 in yards, number 5 in points, and they had an okay defense. The defense statistically was 19th in yards, 23rd in points. But what can you say about what they did offensively? And let's talk Jared Goff, because we'll get to the big contract, but what has Jared Goff, because Jared Goff was completely cast off. And I think I asked you when the trade happened that year, if if y'all felt that Goff was an asset or a liability in that deal. Because because I think felt the Rams were kind of trying to, they felt that Goff was a throw-in.
Yes. Yes. And the Lions absolutely did not see it that way.
Okay.
And it took so, it took some time for us as collective Lions fans to realize that Jared Goff was going to be an asset for us. We knew at the time of the trade that the GM, that they really liked Jared Goff. Like, they wanted him and they wanted it to work. But that first year, he was a little rough. He's doing, you know, the 360 no scope throws. Like, stop doing that, dude. But you know, he and new offensive coordinator Ben Johnson, they put together an offense built around what Goff does really well, which he makes very good decisions with the ball, aside from the thing. He reads pre-snap very well. He's very good when he can distribute the ball to multiple targets, and that's something that we've got plethora of receiving assets, which I'm sure we'll go over. They got him a fantastic offensive line. It's the best offensive line in football. I will not accept any arguments otherwise. And because of that, Jared Goff has become a Pro Bowl quarterback who earned a massive contract, and he's earned it, and he has earned the love of Detroit fans. If you go in Michigan, just to random places, I live in the Grand Rapids area. We have a minor league hockey team here. Jared Goff chants broke out in every it's the Grand Rapids Griffins game. Every Griffins game had Jared Goff chants. It's crazy how quickly
Detroit,
we've embraced
Detroit sports fans. The Detroit fandom is something different, because that would yeah. literally never happen in the Phoenix area. That's wild to me.
Yeah, and well, some of it is the fact that the other Detroit teams, I guess the Tigers are okay this year, but like the Red Wings aren't doing very well, and the Pistons are just atrocious. So you got to have some. It's been a very long time since the Lions were the best team in Detroit. I'm not sure that's ever happened either in my lifetime. It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, offensively, weapons everywhere. David Montgomery rushes for over 1,000 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs nearly gets there. Which, by the way, the Jahmyr Gibbs pick was kind of the surprise of last year. Detroit kind of going with the, hey, we're going to surprise everyone in the draft by taking a running back and a linebacker in you know, the two non-value positions for the draft, that they go first round for that. Amon-Ra St. Brown has an all-pro season, over 1,500 yards, and you get Sam Laporta as well. So, I mean, my goodness, the production across the board, and you have Josh Reynolds getting 600 yards. You've got almost 500 yards from Khalif Raymond. So you had production kind of across the board. You had three guys with over 1,100 yards from scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Was there any disappointment at all in how the offense played? And you said as well, because you said the best offensive line of football, because you've got Taylor Decker. You've got Penei Sewell, who's looked fantastic early in his career. What was there not to like offensively?
They would have occasional lulls, and this is more of a Ben Johnson thing than anything else. He will at times try to show you how smart and creative he is. And sometimes it's brilliant, but there are other times where they just throw away a series or two. And that actually happened in the NFC Championship game against the 49ers, where they gave away a couple of possessions that where they could have done more with them. That's probably the biggest complaint, because, you know, skill-wise, they're there. You know, the balance of finding Jameson Williams, we got to talk about him, because he was a first-round pick in 2022. He hasn't been there yet. It's coming. He's looked a lot better this spring. I was at some of the practices. He looks good, but he's going to be a guy. If you're familiar with Will Fuller when he was in Houston,
yeah.
Vertical field stretcher, incredible when he makes the catch, but doesn't always make the catch, doesn't always get where and when he needs to be. Very similar, but I covered those Texans teams, one of the hats I used to wear, and he made everybody else better by his presence on the field.
Yeah.
And Jameson Williams is getting to that point. And that was probably the biggest fan disappointment last year, was that J-Mo just didn't really go off. Because, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs was phenomenal. Sam LaPorta had the greatest rookie tight end season ever. There's a whole lot to like with it. So, you were sort of picking this when we're talking about what didn't work. But there's always room for improvement. They scored first very well. They were very good on third down for the most part. And some of that is the fact that they go for it on fourth down a ton. And they're very good at it, too. So they do a lot of things that other teams don't do. And that makes them more difficult to prepare for. You'll see it in week three when we get together.
Well, and you look at, like, in that kind of bit them in the butt in the second half of that title mm-hmm. game. But, like, if you look at those failed plays, they didn't fail because it was the wrong play call. The players they yeah. called upon to make the plays just didn't yeah. do it. You had Josh Reynolds drop a pass. You had, what yeah. was it? Was it, I can't remember, was it a fullback that had the other fourth down play that I can't remember.
I don't even want to. It was bad. Jahmyr Gibbs had a fumble that was like, yeah.
People were criticizing, like, why didn't you go with it? Like, but look at the play. Look at the play. The play was there.
It was there.
They were there. It yeah. wasn't a bad yes, play at all. The execution. Now, and you had you decided to go to one of your other bigger names, perhaps. I mean, you wouldn't have been able to make that play because they were the focus. Those plays were open. And so defensively, I mean, you got to say yeah. that Aiden Hutchinson has been everything and more that
he's been very good.
That what you could have expected. And, like Jacksonville is Trayvon Walker's talented, but how could you have gone wrong with Aiden Hutchinson and to end up with the Michigan guy in Michigan playing yeah. him with his pants on fire, which is the way he plays, and to be as talented as he is, how good was he last year? And would you say he is sort of the strong point of the defense? The defense could have been a bit better, but 51 tackles, yeah. 11 and a half sacks, 33 quarterback hits. Was he essentially like the leader of that defense?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to factor in the fact that on the opposite side, the other edge was Charles Harris, Romeo Okwara, Julian Okwara. Two of those guys are probably out of football now. They just didn't have any counterbalance to Hutchinson. He did that all himself and did it in a variety of ways. He can win inside, outside, hand in dirt, standing up. He can drop into coverage. He's a great, great player. Really emerged as more of a team focal point and leader in his second season too. And big things are very much expected from him going forward because they didn't get a lot out of anybody else. Lee McNeil in the middle of the defensive line, he's pretty good. And I don't think he gets enough national recognition. He's a very talented guy, 320 pounds. And if you watched him play, like, you'd never guess that he's that happy. He's a definite rising player, but they got to get more out of everybody else around him. But man, Hutchinson last year, there was some skeptics from local, like, oh, you're taking it because he went to Michigan. Like, he wasn't that great at Michigan. Like, he had all those people around him. Well, I think he silenced those people pretty well.
which was weird. Like, I thought Jacksonville was overthinking things when they took Walker. Not that Walker's not going to be great. I'm like, just
right.
It's
yeah.
like Aiden Hutchinson was. You know what he is. You see what how he plays. Like, there was no doubt. There was no doubt. Like, the floor was super high with the high yeah. ceiling, and that's what I.
Yeah.
And he's worked out perfectly. And like, let's face it. Like he's a perfect match for Dan Campbell, isn't he?
Absolutely. You know, a guy who eats, breathes football. Very high football IQ. Very high desire to win. A hatred of losing, but, just that's Dan Campbell in a nutshell, a guy who's, going to be fiercely competitive, but also really football smart, and that's Aiden Hutchinson, too.
What'd you get out of Jack Campbell as a rookie? Like, looking stat-wise, he's a guy I liked coming out of college. I see 17, he played mm-hmm. in all games, 12 starts, 95 tackles, 2 sacks. Solid rookie yeah. season. Do you expect more from him moving forward?
Yeah, he played a bunch of different roles. They tried him. The Lions only ever play two linebackers. That's sort of the base defense. You might see more three-man looks this year, because, and part of that is because Campbell has emerged as a guy who's going to take over one of the inside roles. He played some Sam, which in Detroit is a pass rush, almost exclusive pass rush role. He never really got comfortable doing any one thing. He's a good player. He's going to do better this year. I think everybody expects that. Again, high football IQ, high intensity guy, good tackler. There's some things he's got to clean up. He tends to start plays flat-footed a little bit. He can get a little bit confused if you've got a lot coming at him. But some of that's just being a rookie in the NFL too. You know, you see that with rookies. They learn these things. They understand how to prepare better for it. He's a really good player. I'm not sure he's ever going to be an all-pro or even a pro bowler, but he's going to be a guy that's going to be a really reliable, good starter for a long time. And that's in this defense, that's what you need. He and Alex Anzalone next to each other are a very good combination. So we're pretty optimistic about what's going on there with Jack Campbell.
Would you say that last year, even with the disappointment of the second half loss in the championship game, would you say that they probably capped out what they could have done? Like, obviously they could have beaten San Francisco. They were in control of that game. But if you look, like, once you move away from the pain of that loss, would you look at that team and say you probably capped out what they were likely capable of doing? Or is there a little bit of saying, oh, we could have won a championship?
Yeah, there's definitely that, because we had beaten Kansas City in Kansas City in week one. But, you know, finishing in the final four, making it a competitive run at a very good San Francisco team, a very well-rounded San Francisco team, there's no shame in that. And I think most people are like, and this is one of the refrains that I've said about on the radio show that I do and on the podcast that I do. Last year's Lions team was probably the worst edition of the Lions that you're going to see for another couple of years. And the fact that they made it where they did is something to be very proud of. But it's also something that leaves them a little bit hungry, because they do feel that they could have done a little bit more. I think given the fact that, you know, their starting secondary in that final game the starting cornerbacks were rough. One of the starters in that game, Kendall Vildor, might not make an NFL team this year. That's how shaky that was. He's like number six, number seven on the Lions depth chart right now. You know, it's pretty impressive the way that they got as far as they did with what they did and with no real history of winning. That's, you know, in retrospect, as we look back, yeah, that's a pretty darn good accomplishment.
Yeah, it was. Let's look at the offseason. Coming on Exeter Rises here at Podcast Special Cardinals Talk. I'm about this. Move on and talk about the offseason that the Lions have had, because they've made some additions. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, Best Star of Cardinals Talk on the web. We'll get to the draft where they added secondary help, but like, talk free agency. Did they lose anyone that's going to be, like, Jonah Jackson ended up signing with the Rams. Were the Lions ready to move on from Jonah Jackson? Were they in, they were already in position to take care of that, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And for the price tag that he got from the Rams, God bless him, man. He parlayed one really good season, which wasn't 2023, it was 2022, into a $10 million a year contract. Good for him. He's a good player. He'll do well with the Rams. But the Lions were not ready to pay that for what they did. So, you know, losing him, losing Josh Reynolds, you know, Josh Reynolds was sort of a security blanket for Jared Goff coming from the Rams together. He's a good guy. How they replace him remains to be seen, but he's certainly a replaceable player, as is Jonah Jackson, as good as he was. And as important as you want to have continuity on your offensive line, they were certainly prepared for him to go.
Anyone else of note that left is that leaves a little bit of a hole?
So Cam Sutton didn't really leave in free agency. His play steadily declined. So he was a prime free agent. They signed him, it was, you know, $12 million a year contract. And he started out pretty well. it didn't end well for him. Some of that, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass. He was hurt and didn't let on that he was as injured as he was. But nobody's really sad that he's gone. Just the manner in which he left with the weird suspension. I mean, he's now suspended as he signed with the Steelers for a domestic assault incident. That
half the season. That's always.
Yeah. He won't be missed from that standpoint, but it was still weird to see him go the way he did. And he's the only other real starter that went away. The other edge spot, which, you know, Charles Harris, Romeo Okwara, Julian Okwara, those guys needed to go. They were fine, especially Romeo Okwara, a guy who, built his career in Detroit after washing out quickly with the Giants. Great, great player, was a great guy, good locker room asset, but they were ready to move on there too. They didn't really lose anybody else of consequence.
Additions in free agency, the names that I see, the most significant ones, they added size in the middle with DJ Reader, very talented player. And they added a veteran in the cornerback room, Amik Robertson. They added a little punch to the edge with Marcus Davenport, though he hasn't been, lived up to everything. And then, of course, the biggest name perhaps is adding Kevin Zeitler guard. And at a not bad deal. He's 34 years old, but he's still really good, but only have to pay him $6 million. That's not a bad deal at all.
Oh, yeah. For a one-year plug-in, that's absolutely great. And I covered him when he was with the Browns. His play-to-play, snap-to-snap consistency is fantastic. He just doesn't have bad plays. He doesn't have a lot of great plays, but you never see him, getting whipped. And that's important in an offense, in a precision offense, the way that the Lions run it. There's a lot to be said for that.
Honestly, that might be the best thing that you can say about any offensive lineman is it, if you eliminate the bad and all you are is what you need the team to be, you don't have to be dominant, that you'll play a decade and more in the NFL as an offensive lineman if you do that.
Absolutely, and he's made a career of that, and that we're very happy to have him in. They did draft a couple of potential replacements for him in the long term, but if he's a placeholder for a year, I'm not worried about that spot at all. Reader coming in, I think, is probably the most important addition, because that other defensive tackle spot next to Aleem McNeil was a real sore point last year. It went from Isaiah Bugs to Benito Jones, just a lot of guys who were very regrettable. They brought in Tyson Alualu basically out of retirement, sort of NFL-imposed retirement at the end of the season. They were just desperate to get anything at all out of it. Reader's the guy that I covered with the Texans in his younger days. He's a really smart, solid player. If you try to single block him, he's going to destroy your run game, and you do not run one gap against him. So he's definitely needed. Now, the Lions' run defense last year was fantastic. They were the best run defense in the league against running backs. Quarterbacks that ran, it's a different story. They allowed the fewest yards per carry and fewest first downs to running backs of any team in the league. And they did that without having DJ Reader in there. So we expect that to augment it, where hopefully he shows up, is that he frees up Aleem McNeil to get in the 6 to 10 sack range. And he's got that potential.
And the defending running quarterbacks is a problem, because it's really hard to do. It's really hard to do.
It is.
It's incredibly difficult to do, because you can have everything locked up, and if you miss step one, some quarterback, like Kyler Murray, is one of them. Like, he will make.
Yes, he is.
He is a problem, because like which do you do? Do you keep him in the pocket where he can make plays, or do you let him get out where he's going to beat you? And he's going to embarrass you on the field.
Yeah. And there's hope that Jack Campbell's progression into his second season will help some of that. But Aaron Glenn is our defensive coordinator. His defenses have struggled since he's been here with mobile quarterbacks. Justin Fields has had probably the three best games of his career against the Detroit Lions. They do not spy. Maybe that's something that will be an adaptation. Maybe it'll be something where they do go to more three linebacker sets, And Jack Campbell or Alex Anzalone can be a spy on Murray. We'll see. I don't know. It's that's certainly an area when we get to talking about the matchup with the Cardinals that is definitely worrisome, because Marcus Davenport is the other addition you talked about. He doesn't do anything against opposing quarterbacks other than try to sack them. And he's a guy that has Saints fans will tell you and Vikings fans will tell you that he didn't contain very well on the outside. And that's if there's one area where Aiden Hutchinson can get a little bit better, he can do a little bit better at playing that contain rush. That's just not something that he's done all that much of yet, because he hasn't been asked to do it. So, that's an area where we're looking at where hopefully it gets a little bit better.
They're like I get paid for sacks, so I want sacks. The run game, right. Run game. Oh, Simeon Rice, like Simeon Rice drafted by the Cardinals. I mean, yes. Talking 25 years ago, he was literally that. Like he would, especially if it was a pass play that might have been a rush to begin with, he would get out of his lane just to get to the quarterback because he made a fantastic career on it, but it made him not particularly helpful on the Cardinals defense when he was here. Oh, Cardinals had some really good players that weren't that great for them.
Sometimes you just get guys at the wrong stages of their career too. Simeon, I remember watching Simeon Rice at Illinois back in the day. He was a wrecking ball, but
in the draft, the first two picks they add cornerbacks and a couple of pretty good ones. And let's be honest, defensive players ended up being value picks late in the first round because of how many offensive players went there. Mock drafts, Tarion Arnold was viewed by many as a top 10 pick, and you get him at number 24. You did have to move up to get Dallas, but Dallas is we saw on the Cardinals flight plan where they took us back there that Dallas was trying to trade out of the pick. The Cardinals almost moved up, but obviously got the better deal from the Lions. You get Tarion Arnold, and it was Arnold. I know he was some people's cornerback one, but pretty much across the board, he was one or two. And to get him in the mid 20s, should he be good from day one?
Yes, absolutely. He will be starting from day one. There's no question about that. He's got the right blend of swagger and humility. It's tough to describe how you know that, but you see it. We had Darius Slay in Detroit for a very long time, and Arnold coming in reminds me of Slay on the field, but he's got a little bit more swagger to him as he goes about it. But he's also a guy, he gets it. Like, he's coachable. He's not somebody who's going to go out and freelance on his own on the way some braggadocious cornerbacks do. He's a very good fit for what they want to do, which is press on the outside, take away the timing, disrupt, because they haven't really had anybody that's done that in a while. Since Slay was exiled to Philadelphia by a prior regime, we're still not over that. We should be. But, yeah, he's going to be – I expect him to be a very serious contender for Defensive Rookie of the Year. And that's he was – he and Quinyon Mitchell were 1A and 1B for me as a draft evaluator. And I actually think they both went to the best situations that they could, with Quinyon going to the Eagles to basically replace Darius Slay. I think both those guys are going to be fantastic, and I'm very happy to have him in here. Interesting that you with the draft trade, had the Lions not gone up and gotten Tarion Arnold, one of the guys that they were very seriously looking at is in Arizona, in Terrace Robinson.
Darius Robinson, we're excited about that pick.
Round you two, should be.
Round two, well, it was Robinson's teammate in Missouri, Enos Wickstra, a guy that, if I recall, he brings a little bit of mean, doesn't he?
Yes, he is a very much in-your-face press corner. He's, I don't know how much he's going to play as a rookie. Because they used one of their third round picks to trade to get Carlton Davis. We'll get to that in a second. But Rakestraw is a guy, they're trying to figure out where he fits. They tried him some in the slot. He's coming off of core muscle sports hernia surgery for what you're not supposed to call it, but that's what it is. That's what we know it as. So he's getting nursed in a little bit, but he's a scheme fit. I wasn't the biggest fan of his. I actually liked his college teammate Chris Abrams Drain a little bit better as an NFL prospect. But Rakestraw fits the press corner mold and as an aggressive guy. And he will come up and he's very good against run defense. And that's something that the Lions really want from their corners is to attack the run. He does that very well. So he was a guy that I bristled against as a potential first round pick, and he got mocked to the Lions at 29 a lot. Very happy that they got him at 60 where they did, right? Because that's a much better value
all
fit
those
for
mock
him.
Drafts. I mean, those cornerbacks ended, like, there were lots of cornerbacks mocked in the late first round that just got pushed. That just got pushed out of the first round with all the offensive players. The rest of the draft, you get the Canadian guy, Giovanni Manu, tackle, Sione Vaki, running back out of Utah, Mekhi Wingo, DT out of LSU, and Boston College guard Christian Mahogany. Of those guys, is there any of these guys that you see as a potential contributor year one? My favorite name of that group is Wingo. In the round six, do you think he will get any run this year as a rookie?
He's got a shot at it for sure, to be the number three or number four defensive lineman. And he's played, his biggest problem is he's an odd size. He's 6'1", 282 pounds. That's not big enough to play inside, and it's not small enough to play outside. So they're sort of figuring out what they've got in him. He looked great in the spring practices, and he's a guy that's definitely – you know, upward bound. Vaki is going to play a ton on special teams, and he might wind up being their return man, their kick return man. He is certainly going to play extensively on all special teams units. Mahogany is a guy, I loved his tape at Boston College. He is a bruiser, just a gap scheme mauler. Well, Lions run maul gap scheme. So if Kevin Zeitler doesn't work out for some reason, they've got Christian Mahogany in there to plug in. But basically they're buying him a year by bringing Zeitler in. But he's probably not going to see a lot unless things go south or injuries happen in his rookie season. And Giovanni Manu is an absolute project. Incredible physical specimen. He is 352 pounds, and he looks like he's 252. Looks like a guy, I've used the line before. It looks like he came out of the womb lifting weights. Like, he's just ridiculously athletic. Legs are tree trunks, but they're sculpted tree trunks. Like, it's unreal, like, being in his presence. Nobody knew who he was when they drafted him. And the first time we saw him at rookie minicamp, and we're like, okay, all right, we get it.
I recall getting, so he was a guy, I think the Cardinals met with or worked out. There was, I think he was a guy who was it? Someone, I had to be his agent that was pushing him.
Probably. Yeah.
But as the, like, the sleeper in the draft,
Yeah. And I mean, they traded a third round pick in 2025 to move up and get him in the fourth round. I'm hopeful that he's able to be a backup tackle, backup guard. They're working him at both. Just seeing what they've got. But this is a guy, I equate Canadian college football. I live in a D3 area, hotbed. Shout out to Hope College, which is like a mile that way in the distance. That's probably the level of play that the Canadian college football was. So there's a massive gap. And just watching him in minicamp and OTAs, his technique's all over the place. We have a brilliant offensive line coach in Hank Braley, longtime NFL player. He's a very good player developer. He's got his hands full with Manu. This was a pick that was made with an eye towards 2025, 2026, when Taylor Decker might be retiring or moving on at some point. But that's an investment in the future. But as far as 2024 is concerned, Mekhi Wingo of the day three guys is probably the guy that's most likely to make an impact.
Coming to next on the Rise Ups here at Podcast, Best Heart Carlos Talk on the Web. Let's move on. Look ahead to 2024, the big expectations that there are in Detroit. That's coming to next on Rise Ups here. We're back on the Rise Ups here Podcast, the Best Heart Cardinals Talk on the Web. Detroit viewed as one of these, you know, still viewed as the top pick, although Green Bay is ascending in the NFC North.
Yeah.
And what are kind of expectations? Because you get to the NFC Championship game, you still have San Francisco that looks really, really good. How have fans taken to the success? Are they now Super Bowl or bust? Or are they still riding that, hey, we're good?
That's a great question, and there's a healthy blend of both of that.
I understand that completely. As a Suns fan here, that you have to enjoy.
Yeah.
You have to enjoy in the NBA the success, especially when you're bad for so long. But the second they went to the finals, after that, it was now they're disappointing. Like, they're good, but now they're not good enough. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it, I don't want that to happen. Like, but that's a good place to be, right? Because that means
it is
good. But you don't like to feel like it's also a terrible feeling when you're covering a team. You're like, this team is good. Why aren't you happy?
Yeah, that's very accurate. And I understand it. Like, there's the term lionized for being a Lions fan. Like, you're so used to being, okay, we thought this team, like, we thought the Matthew Stafford and Ndamukong Suh team back in 2011, 2012 would be pretty good. And they were, but they couldn't take that next step. And, you know, the 90s teams with Barry Sanders and Chris Spielman and all those guys, like, that was a very good roster. And they won one playoff game and couldn't ever get past it. Like, this, there's certainly some concern among the fans that we've been here before. We've seen this franchise put out good rosters and they never achieved. And I get that. But I really do think that this is a different thing. I think winning that second playoff game last year, they had never won multiple playoff games in the same season before, ever. They did it last year. And the core roster is back. There's so many guys that are in the relative primes of their careers, which I don't think gets talked about enough when you're talking about windows. Penei Sewell, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam LaPorta rising into a second. Goff is still a young man. Like, there's so many guys that are still, like, not at the edge of their window. I think that window opening is just at the right time. And it's very exciting. They should be expected to win the NFC North. And I say that knowing that team in Green Bay, that's a good football team.
It is.
Packers are a good team. I think the Bears are better and will be competitive, but I don't think they're there yet. And I'll be honest, I don't know what to think of the Vikings. I can see the Vikings going 12-5. I can also see them earning the number 3 overall pick in next year's draft. Their defensive line is abysmal. Like, it's bad. Like historically bad.
They're going to be throwing out Sam Darnold to start the year.
Yeah.
As much as people, there's still some Sam Darnold people that are like, this is his chance. I'm like, here's the thing about Sam Darnold. He makes too many mistakes.
Yeah.
He makes too many bad throws, and he just turns the ball over too much. And then, and that's he's kind of the polar opposite of a JJ McCarthy, who
consummate leader.
Right, like everything you hear about him pre-draft was not about his football.
Right, but I mean, if you look at the like Vikings weapon, like that offense is loaded, and they've got a good line too, so they're scary. But the Lions are the best team in the NFC North. They won their first ever division title last year. I expect them to do it again, but they're going to have to earn it. It's not going to be given to them. It's not going to be an easy road. You know that from being in the West, where there's some pretty darn good football teams too.
Would making the championship game again and failing to reach the Super Bowl, would that be viewed as a disappointment this year?
Probably, but it kind of depends on, like, did the Lions give the game away the way they did against San Francisco, where they literally got a ball off of a defender's face mask that won the game, and you know, a steady wide receiver in Josh Reynolds dropping a pass that would have won the game.
Craig Reynolds, that's the running back that had the other play. It was crazy.
Yes. Yes.
It was both Reynolds. Both Reynolds yes. went to in those crucial moments. Like,
yeah, it's yeah. And Craig Reynolds is normally a very reliable guy, and it just didn't work for it. Yeah, that's I think if they got beat by a team that's really, really good, I don't think that there would be a lot of grumbling. But most Lions fans going into that San Francisco game last year were like, Brock Purdy's not beating us. Come on. And he did it. I'm sure you're familiar with that sentiment in Arizona.
Yes. I'm interested in seeing, like, Brock Purdy is basically perfect. But his skill set, like his strengths, are perfect for Shanahan's offense, which makes him so good because he's so smart.
Yeah.
But I'm super interested to see the process once they pay him, because the talent around him, unless they are fantastic drafters,
it'll
be interesting to see how he plays when it's not the best.
Yeah.
Arguably the best. You have got the best running back. You've got one of the best receivers. You've got two of the best receivers. You got arguably the best tight end to throw to.
Yeah, they're that's very, very loaded. I actually give Brock Purdy credit. He led the NFL in completion percentage and downfield throws last year, and it's pretty obvious why. Like you had to give Purdy some of that credit.
His down the field accuracy, especially. His mid-range accuracy is incredible, and I think that's the main difference. Is like the difference between like him and Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo, who was perhaps more talented, but was not as precise a throw. In fact, like his receivers, like there were lots of wide open receivers that he turned into no after the catch plays because he misfired and they made the catch, but it should have been wide open and moving down the field. And Purdy's really, really good at that. But
he is very good at that. Jared Goff is too, which is one of the reasons why he got paid in Detroit. But yeah, I think like if there's just like a juggernaut team that's like 15-2 and it's on the road and is not in Detroit, if the game's in Detroit and they lose, it's going to be an absolute disappointment. No doubt about it. And it could be in Detroit this year. This is a team that expects to be, you know, competing for that number one seed in the bye. And I don't get a lot of pushback from anybody on that. Like they're going to be competing for that. Right. Doesn't mean they're going to get it. No.
But like best case scenario, like a reasonable best case scenario is a Super Bowl win. Like that. Mm-hmm. It's not crazy to think that, which is wild. That's wild to think about the Lions, but like do you think they're 12 wins that they had last year? Is that 11-12 wins probably kind of the floor that they're going to reach this year?
Yeah, they've got a weird schedule where they could – I could see 11-6. Unless they're ravaged with injuries or you know, guys who have played very well in the past just don't live up to it. But I don't see that happening under Dan Campbell. That's just not – they're very good at weeding those guys out. So I think tying for the NFC North Championship with Green Bay, I think is probably the low point. If it's worse than that, then a whole lot of injuries happen and a whole lot of bad happen. And that's just, you can't anticipate the injuries or expect it. I mean, obviously if Jared Goff goes down, if Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down, there's problems. You don't replace that. You don't practice screwed, tomorrow from the old saying.
That's the best way to describe that. that's like when the Colts had it, Peyton Manning and Tom Moore would say things like,
we don't
practice that way. Like, of course Peyton's getting all the reps because if this other guy gets in, we're effed anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, Curtis Painter was their backup for a long time. If Curtis Painter's playing, you don't want him in the game. Probably want Matt Painter playing, the Purdue basketball coach. Yeah, if reasonable health stays, this team, if they don't at least tie for the division title, it's going to be a big disappointment. But I don't think anybody really expects that in Detroit or outside Detroit. They're not gonna roll to games. They've got a tough schedule. They're gonna drop some games. They don't match up particularly well with teams that have running quarterbacks, which is one of the reasons why Arizona is not a
it's their first road game too. They opened two games at home, and they're going to have their first road game against Arizona, who will have been coming off of their home opener against the Rams. How do Lions fans view that matchup? I know still probably most people look at the game and that's a should win. How challenging a game do you think that's going to be?
If Kyler Murray is dialed in and can get some open space, and Marvin Harrison Jr. is as advertised, and I expect him to be, I don't think that the Cardinals have the defensive firepower to slow down the offensive attack. You know, we talked before the show, Starling Thomas was in Detroit last year and wound up playing a big role for a cornerback poor team like the Lions were last year. The fact that he didn't make that and wound up being in Arizona and is still in the mix in Arizona, I think that says a lot about where the Cardinals defense is. So I think the Lions should expect to outscore the Cardinals in that game. Might be a 40-30 type of game,
or 35-33 games like that next year if they offer
that could very well be. But hey, I mean,
at least it'll be exciting. Because if there's one thing that is interesting is that if you have a good offense and a bad defense, it's frustrating. If you have a good defense and a terrible offense, you're hopeless.
Hopeless
because there's the pressure. You can't you get more than 7 points down when you have a bad offense and you're not like, that's it. We're done. Couple years ago, 2018, we'll go back to 2018 when the Cardinals were so bad and the Lions weren't that good. The Lions got up by 7 points and it felt like, well, we're done.
I remember that game. It felt like we played every year back then.
It's been like that for a long time. Yeah. It's been that way for a long time. This year we're doing it because of the division, but, you know, if we play each other next year, that's a bad thing for
that probably
you,
means or probably really means good things for you. I will say it. I like where Arizona is heading. They're pointed in the right direction. I think they got a good coach. I think they made a good hire. I think they drafted extremely well this year. And for the most part last year too. So the arrow's pointing up, but San Francisco's good. The Rams, I'm curious what the Rams are going to look like without Aaron Donald, but you can't write them off. Seattle is a massive variable. I don't know what to make of them. I think that the Cardinals could realistically catch them. I think if the Rams falter a little, I think the Cardinals are in a good position. The Cardinals remind me of the Chicago Bears in the NFC North in that their upside is there and you can see it, but is it going to manifest early enough for it to matter in 2024, or are you looking forward to 2025 as the year where you can turn that division upside down? And that potential is certainly there because I'm not sure that San Francisco's defense is going to be as good as what some of the checks that are being written. I'm not sure they can cash all those, but that's still a very good football team, no doubt about it.
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up to Your podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the web. It's our opponent preview with the Lions. That's Jeff Risden. You can find his stuff all over the NFL Wire, scattered over the last few years, but mainly over Draft Wire and at Lions Wire. Thanks, Jeff, for coming on. That'll wrap this show up. We will be back soon with more opponent previews coming up soon. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!